Hey there, are you sick and tired of feeling sick and tired? Join Adel Kozilski and Feige Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
Good morning and welcome to 101.9 High FM. I'm Adel Kozilski.
And I'm Feige Stern.
And we're glad that you're joining us with another episode of the Healthy You, Wealthy You. Feige, I've got to give it to you. Sometimes you find the most incredibly interesting people. And today we are going to be speaking to a zoonotic consultant with an interest in human helminthology. I would dare to say that I'm going to give 100 rand to anybody in the next 30 seconds who knows what a zoonotic consultant is and what is human helminthology. But if you hang around with us, you are going to be pleasantly surprised and your mind is going to open up, because that's why we have these conversations on the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. So welcome to 101.9 High FM. And it gives me great pleasure in inviting Terry Herold to our show. Welcome to our show.
Hi, ladies. Thank you so much for having me. And I think we're going to have a very interesting chat.
Indeed. I'm super excited. Right. Before we get into how you are a zoonotic consultant and what human helminthology is all about, how about giving us a little bit of a background about what you do and how you got to call yourself these fancy names?
Well, I'm actually a large animal management expert in the fact of I've had 43 years of extreme experience in raising large animals like cattle herds, stud herds, and then obviously my eland herds. We were the first people to bring them from Zimbabwe and Botswana into the bushveld. And I have always been obviously very focused on animal health for production. And the most important part of animal health is to make sure that the animals are relatively parasitic free. So for 43 years, I worked with getting animals to a point where their immune systems were strong enough so that they could actually cope with what was going on around them in the environment. And coming to the bushveld from the Eastern Cape, it was such an eye-opener, because I was now deep in the heart of the Afrikaans bushveld and all the animals, the game and the cattle and people that were so sick. I just looked around me and I thought to myself, this whole community is so sick. What can be the cause of the illness, you know, or the chronic illnesses that these people have? And it was just soon after I got married, I started becoming involved with the game and the hunting and everything, working with a lot of game meat, and I became infected at that stage. Nobody knew what it was, but in the long run, it was borreliosis, or as a lot of people would call it, Lyme disease. But I became very, very ill. And then eventually, after about 15 years, I was diagnosed and started on treatment. And then I thought at that stage that the people in the bushveld, obviously being exposed to all this, the ticks and all the animal diseases, which is where zoonotic comes in. So that is the transfer of animal parasites, pathogens, that cross over into humans. So I became very interested in it because I had been doing a lot of veterinary work with the vets and all the experienced old cattlemen in the bushveld. I'd learned a huge amount about the transfer of illnesses. And I then, once I started getting better from this chronic borreliosis, I then started to have a look around me and think, I wonder if there's something about these parasites that could be transferred across to humans, not knowing what I was going to find. And I was in a group with Lyme ladies, and ended up in a nest of ticks. I had about 40 tick bites on my legs, and I was horrified. And I thought, well, I'm going to end up going back to where I was for 2 years trying to fight for my life. And a rep had come to visit me, and I said to him, I need to inject myself with ivermectin to get these ticks out of my skin. And he said to me, Terry, there's no need to do that. Here's a tube of horse paste on your table. And I said, I cannot possibly use horse paste. And that was my famous last words, because I use Equimax horse-based, well, I advise people to use Equimax horse-based throughout the world. And so I started using it, and within a couple of weeks, the fibromyalgia that I'd had for 20 years just left within weeks. And the big lumps and the pain and the nodules had drastically reduced. So I thought, well, there's something going on here. So I said to the Lyme ladies in the group, come on, ladies, I want you all to start taking some treatment, and you have to poo in an ice cream bowl, ice cream tub, and let's have a look and see what's coming out of you. Because that was what I would have done with animals, is to deworm them and have a look to see what parasites they had. And it was a big joke, and the ladies were horrified, but they did it. And it absolutely opened my eyes to the world outside there, that was absolutely unknown to most people in the Western societies. The amount of parasites that came out of the girls was incredible.
And were all these women involved with animals, or they were just a group of friends that you had?
Everybody has got contact with animals in some kind of, in some, you know, percentage, whether it's just their little dog or their cat. None of those ladies were farm ladies. They all had household pets, but they had been the one common denominator that most of the people have that I treat, is that they've been in some form of groundwater mostly as children, because it takes 10, 20 years before the ecosystem in a gut has been changed by these parasites. So they had been exposed to groundwater, either farm dams or rivers, water skiing, that kind of stuff. And they had contracted these parasites. Of course, I wasn't sure what I was looking at initially. And then I started studying. So I would then take a chronic illness, put it into the search engine, have a look and add parasites to that chronic illness, then, or chronic symptom. Then have a look in the world where there had been a research done and a publication done on that specific symptom that was being caused by parasites. So sometimes it was in India, sometimes it was Asian, and a lot of times it was Egyptian studies, which the Egyptians seem to be of the most experienced, especially because of what the Nile brings when it goes into flood.
You mean, when you're talking about Egyptian information, you're talking like contemporary information now, right?
No, this is from universities. Right. So this is from universities, and it's people that have studied the relation of between parasites and the chronic symptoms that they cause in humans or in animals. But obviously now we're talking humans. So I have been busy with this now for about 8 years, and I have seen the most incredible things throughout the world that these parasites have caused. And the most important things is that it's been hidden away from us in Western societies, or even in, let's not even call it Western societies, let's call it in civilized societies. So in your impoverished societies, they are treated by the big pharmaceutical companies. They get their Nobel Prizes and they get their big grants and their funding to do research. And they go in and they work with the underprivileged people, and they do remarkable work. But that knowledge is kept away from civilized societies, because we have medical insurance. So the moment we have a chronic condition, the medical insurance pays for us to take allopathic medication. So they don't want us to know about the fact that we have these, you know, these parasites that are causing these chronic conditions.
Okay, this is going to be a fascinating conversation. I hope we have whet your appetite. We are speaking to Terry Herold, and we are going to start discussing what zoonosis is, or zoonotic infections. This is the Healthy You Wealth You Show. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You Show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
Welcome back to the Healthy You, Wealthy You Show. All right, so just I've got a lot of questions just to ask you from what you've said previous to the break, but let's like try keep it to an order so that we can understand more. I called you a zoonotic consultant. So what is zoonosis or zoonotic infections? What is the definition?
All right, so zoo is from the Greek word for animals, and then obviously gnosis is to know. So, and it's basically a zoonosis is to know about the animal infections, and it would gets carried across from animals to humans. All right, so that is your parasites, and then bacteria and viruses as well. So anything that an animal can transmit across to a human being is then referred to as a zoonotic infection.
How does it pass on from the animal to the human? Because, like, I mean, I have had people say to me, do you have a dog? And where does the dog sleep? I know, I mean, there are multiple people that have dogs sleeping in their beds.
Yes, correct. So if we take just the domestic animals, let's say cats, for instance, because cats have got even more parasites than what dogs would have because they catch rats. And rats carry some of the most dangerous parasites, including toxoplasmosis, and then obviously the rat lungworm. But so you could deworm your cat every 6 months, one little tablet every 6 months, but your cat could go out within the next week or so and go and catch things. Lizards carry tapeworm, and you know, birds have got parasites, and your cat goes out and goes and catches these things, gets reinfected, and it takes about 3 months for an average parasite to go from egg to an adult worm, and then start laying its own eggs. So then your cat jumps up onto your working surfaces, and little eggs fall out of its anus and land up on the working surfaces, or on your bed, or on your couch, or even on your carpet. And your baby could be crawling around there, and it gets it on its hands, puts it into its mouth, and there the baby's infected, or you're infected. So dogs are pretty much the same. They pick up the roundworms and the tapeworms. The dog flea tapeworm is actually one of the most common ones that spread from cats and dogs to humans, because the eggs are actually carried in the fleas. So the fleas either get caught by the human and squished, and if they don't wash their hands immediately, they have those eggs, those tiny microscopic eggs on their skin, and then you could transmit it into your mouth or your eyes, whatever, you know, if you haven't washed your hands immediately. And if you're sleeping and you have a tendency to snore, a flea could just happily pop into your mouth while it's on its way over from some one cat to a dog or whatever. And you swallow the flea and you have something called Diplodium canis. And that is very common in humans.
Wow. So just in terms of that, so does everybody carry parasites? You know, I don't have animals in my house. As you're talking, I'm glad I don't, but I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this do have animals. Like, how hysterical should we get? Like, how do we know that our animals have it? How do we know that we've got it? Is it something that we should be doing a test every so often?
And how often do we treat ourselves? Yeah. Like, once we do know, how do we treat ourselves?
Okay, so let's start with, does everyone have parasites? Yes. So we're not talking huge roundworms that look like a packet of spaghetti, cooked spaghetti. We are talking about microscopic parasites that have an effect on our immune systems. We're talking, and they'll show up in a blood test as an autoimmune symptom in your body. So you've got an autoimmune infection or autoimmune disease or whatever the case may be. All that's telling you is that your immune system is on overdrive. So it's really strange because it's called immune suppression. So because the immune system is so busy trying to kill the parasites, it starts to allow other bacteria and viruses to go past it, whereas its job is to actually stop them. So the amount of parasites in your body determine how your immune system actually works. And a lot of times babies are born fully infected. Now, most people will go, oh, that is crap, that's rubbish. You know, we could never be giving our babies parasites. But when you breed animals, the most important thing we have to do before they have their puppies or their kittens or their foals or their calves is to deworm the mother animal, because the first milk that she feeds her baby has parasites in it. And no gynecologist will actually tell a pregnant mom, you need to deworm yourself before you have your baby. Parasites are passed over through the placental barrier, and they cause congenital problems, and they cause developmental problems. And they also then are obviously passed through the colostrum when that baby starts to drink, which is very interesting because most babies' colics start at about 3 months. And that is when the parasite has reached maturity. So a lot of humans are basically infected right then after birth. And then that baby goes on to having a lot of, they don't sleep at night, they have a lot of allergies, they have a lot of eczema, and they go on to be children with ADHD. Some children will tend to get become on the spectrum with autism. It's really, really scary what is out there as a result of these things.
So how does a human being check for parasites?
Next question.
I've got to repeat. How does one check for parasites? Your blood test is going to go and show that you're having an autoimmune reaction. Is it could it be a histamine reaction? Yes, no. Like how do I know that I've got parasites that are being detrimental to me?
So there are the testing for parasites is extremely flawed. They do something called fecal flotation or fecal sedimentation. So basically what the path labs are looking for are the eggs. Now, a few of us have actually gone and taken actual parasites to the path labs, actual parasites, and the path labs look at them and say it's undigested food, because they're not trained to see a full-on parasite. They're trained to see the eggs. So going to go and get yourself tested for parasites is just a waste of money. Sometimes if the people have got a specific kind of parasite, and normally they're roundworms, will cause higher eosinophils. But even then, I have worked with people who have had eosinophilic cystitis and diseases where the eosinophils are raised. And instead of the medical community saying, well, there's a possibility that you could have parasites, you don't have cancer, so it can't be cancer, so it must be an allergic reaction. They'll put people onto high doses of antihistamines, which doesn't resolve the symptom because they don't actually have an allergy. They have parasites that are causing the actual symptom.
So if we can't test, so you're saying having a fecal test is not, what can't be conclusive, then how do you conclude that you've got a parasite?
So the only way that you can really, really conclude that you have parasites in your body is that if you have any symptom that is not in balance with a normal body that's in homeostasis. So if you've got any symptom like sleepless nights, like anxiety, depression, brain fog, any gut, the gut problems are all caused by parasites. So we're talking Crohn's disease, we're talking SIBO, we're talking diverticulitis, we're talking colon cancers, colorectal cancers, constipation, diarrhea, alternating constipation and diarrhea. We're talking malabsorption. That is my biggest symptom that I find in humans right throughout the world, is the fact that the inflammation, the chronic inflammation in their gut causes malabsorption, and malabsorption will lead to anxiety, depression, ADHD, even stuff like heart arrhythmia, anything like that, because of the minerals that we need to keep our brain functioning and firing like it should as an electrical organ in our body. We're not getting those minerals, and it causes massive, massive.
Do we not get those minerals because the worms themselves are actually literally stealing them from us?
Well, it's not exactly as cut and dried as that is. We're not getting minerals because we aren't taught to take in the correct minerals. We're taught in society to take vitamins. You must take vitamins. Nobody says to you, you need to take minerals. The minerals are the building blocks of your body. So you need to be more, you need to func you need to focus more on your mineral intake than actually on your vitamin intake. And what happens is that people just take it for granted that they're getting the minerals in the food. But once you've got an established ecosystem in your small intestine that parasites have created, the chronic inflammation that is in that small intestine creates a barrier, like they call it a mucoid plaque, or we call it a gel layer, but it creates this barrier in sections of the small intestine where the parasites are attached. And where that section is, there's no absorption whatsoever. So no water, no minerals, no vitamins, nothing, no amino acids, nothing gets absorbed to that section of the gut. And where that section is, there's no peristalsis because peristalsis cannot work through a thinned membrane. So what happens is that the fecal matter comes along and it stops right there. And it takes a lot of fecal matter to come up behind it to push it forward and go through that section. But before it can do that, it actually expands sideways and it compacts this gel, this mucus that's been secreted chronically by the inflammation in that side of that piece of the intestine. It then builds up this layer. So the passage that the fecal matter has to go through becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And the constipation becomes worse in the person that has got this problem.
Okay, so
So
let's
it's
just,
my job to get rid of that.
So again, what I'm hearing for you saying the majority of people probably are walking with parasites either because they're around animals, okay? If they like to go camping, anybody like going to the Kruger National Park, anybody like going to the Vol to go ski, etc.,
I think it's
etc.
also like certain foods that you eat. It's like the salmons and the meats you also get the parasites from.
So if we can safely assume that all of us are carrying some form of parasite colony inside of us, surely if you are showing like really extreme and pain and like I'm aware of it with myself and with the thing I had Lyme disease and I had tick bites, like I was bitten in with a tick, I don't know when. And only after many years did they, did they go and find it out? Like I personally have had episodes of that. What should one do, if I can use the word prophylactically? Like if you're going to make an assumption, you're saying if you go and just try and get standard bloods, you're not really going to get the answer. If you try and go have a fecal test, you're not going to maybe get all of it. What I'm hearing you say is that we should be like
Deworming.
deworming all the time, deworming ourselves like all the time.
Yes, that's correct. And the biggest problem is that people feel there are so few people that regularly deworm themselves and their pets every 6 months. And it's a false sense of security because the medicines that are available on the market, mebendazole, which is over the counter as Vermox, and a couple of the Vermox generics. And then if you're really lucky and you can get your doctor to prescribe it for you, you will get Zentel, which is albendazole. Now, albendazole is the big brother of mebendazole. So mebendazole is the weakest little one, and then you get the albendazole, which you need a script for. And then you get the bigger brother, the big brother, that's the fenbendazole, which I'm sure you've all heard about on social media. So the biggest problem is that you go along and you do your 6 month treatment and you think, well, now we're fine. But what people don't understand, and this is what really it makes me really upset and stressed to see this going on in social media, is that people don't understand how the life cycles of parasites work. And if you kill the mother worm, she has encysted tiny, tiny microscopic eggs in little sacs in your muscle tissues and in your abdominal cavity and outside of the intestines. But the moment she dies, those eggs start hatching. And those baby, tiny, microscopic worms are moving towards the intestine. They go through the intestinal wall, and they attach to the intestinal wall on the mucosa on the inside, and they start to suck blood and start to grow. So now you've killed your mother worm, you've done your worm, actually you've killed the mother worm, and now you've got 6 months of all these baby worms that some of them will get killed by the immune system, and the others won't. They're going to make it to your intestine. So you're basically releasing a whole lot of, I mean, that mother worm, she can lay between 200 and 300,000 eggs a day.
Okay, so are you saying that just taking the standard over-the-counter medication is not sufficient? Is that what you're saying?
No. No, it's not sufficient at all, because what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with highly evolved animal parasites. So these parasites were on this earth long before humans walked the earth. And, you know, a lot of people think they can deworm themselves with herbs and spices and vermox. It's you will get the tiniest, tiniest amount of response to that. But the animal parasites have got to be treated with the antiparasitics that have been made for them, because they've been strictly controlled in clinical trials. The animals were then infected with those worms to be able to then test the products on them to make sure that they didn't harm the animal in the first place or its organs, because animals have worth. Animals have financial worth, and they have their organs and their food sources. So the most important thing is that the animal antiparasitics are extremely, extremely effective and safe. So the thing is, people, I always say that deworming, working with parasites in a human body, for me, is more complicated and more important than actual cancer. So we need to be taught about these things in schools, in universities. They've taken away the study of human helminthology in most universities. You can't even study it anymore.
I find it so interesting that when we started with homeopaths, you know, we go to our homeopath, he says you have to be tested for Lyme disease. Is Borrelia a you know, and you go, well, what do I need to be tested for this for? Like, why is it even important? And like, obviously over all the years, a lot of information has come out about what parasites do to us. And, you know, there's parasites behind our eyes and, you know, can affect our eyesight. I mean, it does sound like, and also the one thing I was going to mention is that when they do put you on a protocol, it's a proper protocol. It's like a 3 month, sometimes 3 to 6 month protocol of like a very strong anti-parasitic medication.
That's correct. So that's what I do. I do an intensive treatment for 2 weeks. And then the people that come to me 99% of the times are extremely ill people and have been so for many, many years. So, you know, obviously I don't treat everybody the same. It depends on the severity of their symptoms and where they are. And then I put them onto a treatment every sort of 2 to 3 days a week for between 6 to 12 weeks. And then they go onto the full moon treatment. So people often say, why the full moon? And I think they kind of think you want them to strip naked and dance around a fire and that kind of stuff. But it's because that the parasites have got a 28-day, most of them have a 28-day life cycle. And at the full moon, our biorhythms and that are the lowest, our immune system is at its lowest level in 28 days. And for that specific reason, under full moon is when the parasites come out of all the other areas of your body where they have been. They join up in the intestinal tract, and that's where they mate. So that is why a lot of people are affected by the full moon and become very edgy and very irritable. And there's a lot of much more crime that's committed during full moon as well.
Okay, I've got to tell you that I'm a little gobsmacked with our discussion. I'm finding it unbelievably interesting. We're speaking to Terry Herold, and we are speaking about parasites, particularly found in humans. And you have to hang around because it's going to even get more interesting. You're listening to the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
Okay, welcome back. We're discussing parasitic infections in humans. You're talking about putting people on a proper protocol. And we're going to mention the I word now because it was something that was like slammed down, particularly in COVID. And that is the ivermectin debate. Again, before we even start discussing ivermectin and having people throwing maybe some fraught tomatoes at us, let's keep an open mind. It's something that is coming out. I personally was the recipient of some ivermectin medication when I had COVID. I was up and around in exactly 24 hours from infection. And then I was, I guess, brave enough or bold enough to give it to my 83-year-old mother, who was very compromised in so many other ways. She got COVID from me, and she had a turnaround in 48 hours. So I've got to tell you that I did get to the other side of the fence. But let's try have an open discussion about ivermectin, because this has proved to be a very powerful tool in your bag. Am I right?
Yes, correct. When ivermectin was introduced into South Africa for the animals, I think it was about 1987. And my in-law family were big cattle farmers. And so obviously they were of the first people in the country to start using the injectable ivermectin, that very same ivermectin in the dark box that was first showed on COVID, on social media during COVID. And what I saw, we used to speculate with a lot of animals, and I saw the massive benefits of these animals that we got in that were sort of scrawny and, you know, looking very poorly and compromised immune systems. And these animals just like literally within weeks, they were looking glossy and healthy and everything. But I never knew that ivermectin was used in humans until the day I took that horse paste. And then I started doing some more research. And then I found out, of course, about the Nobel Prize and what it was used for in humans up in East Africa. So because I had become very familiar with ivermectin during those 38 years or however long it was until COVID, I was also very familiar with all the products. Every single product in South Africa that contained ivermectin, I knew. And we were also using different formulations. We were using some of them on the game animals. We were using the transdermal application, which means it went through the skin and was absorbed into the system. And then the animal then was obviously dewormed, and the ectoparasites, your ticks and your lice, and that were all treated as well. And we were using a pig premix, which was a powder, which we would put into the feed for the animals and then feed the game or the cattle or whatever like that with the powdered form. So I knew about the injectable, I knew about the horse paste, I knew about the powder and the transdermal. So when I started doing more research into the ivermectin, I learned then that the target parasites for ivermectin in humans and in animals is a microfilarial. And that microfilarial secretes a protein which is like a little force shield around it. Now, it's a microscopic parasite that lives, it's an intracellular parasite. But that specific parasite, which is a lot of times introduced into the body of an animal or a human by a biting vector like a tick or a mosquito, a biting fly, any blood-sucking lice, bed bugs, that they are the worst. Kruger National Park bed bugs are even worse because they bite all the tourists, and then they bite us when we when we go there. And that's exactly how Lyme disease gets spread as well. But So I started, you know, studying this microfilarial connection because that's what it got its Nobel Prize for. And then I eventually realized, but hang on a second, that is the parasite that the ivermectin works the most effectively on is the immature roundworm called a microfilarial, okay? And that specific parasite is the one that is the most responsible for any autoimmune condition in a body. Because what it does is it just, wherever they are, the immune system is right there and it cannot kill them. So there's this constant fight between immune system and the parasite, but nothing can happen. And all that has to happen to the immune system is it needs to be suppressed. And when that happens, using cortisone, prednisone, shock, trauma, accident, operations, you know, surgical operations, especially your emotional trauma, divorce, death, all that kind of stuff, your immune system is suppressed by that event. And these tiny little things break up into millions of little pieces, and each piece becomes a new worm. And that was fascinating for me to learn that it was so easy to actually turn around an autoimmune disease or syndrome just by addressing those parasites. But the most important thing about those parasites is that the Lyme spirochete throughout the millennia has learned to dodge the immune system of an animal or a human being by entering the body of that little microscopic worm and sitting around inside of it until such time as the immune system is suppressed. And then that little Lyme spirochete comes out because it can then go and do its bad things inside of a body because it's not being challenged by the immune system. Because the Lyme spirochete does not have a very effective defense mechanism. So these two work in a symbiotic relationship. And based on how your immune system is being regulated is how they are managed. And that was the single most cause of the deaths in COVID.
How then did the ivermectin actually help a virus if it's meant to be for a parasite?
So ivermectin is an extremely, that people call it the wonder drug, and they have no idea of what a wonder drug it really is. So it's very, very multifaceted. So it doesn't only kill parasites. Ivermectin is also highly virostatic, which means that the way it kills a virus is it goes on a cell surface. You've got something called ACE2 receptors. They like little blocks where a spike protein will come to dock into. Now, every single virus has a spike protein. A virus cannot be, it cannot spread if it does not have a spike protein. So people always thought that the spike protein belonged just to COVID. No. Different kinds of viruses have different kinds of spike proteins. And depending on the type of the spike protein, it determines the length of the spike itself. The longer the spike, the more virulent the virus. The shorter the spike, the easier it is to control that virus. And like your colds and flu viruses, your cold viruses especially are your coronaviruses. They've got the shortest little stubby spike protein. So it doesn't cling to something for very long. It sort of hits something and sticks around and then goes. It falls off and it goes. Whereas when you're talking about retroviruses, adenoviruses, they've got longer spike protein, and that is what is much more effective. And that's what when they talk about the coronavirus was weaponized, they basically put the coronavirus into the spike protein of a adenovirus. So that's why people were talking about AIDS and HIV and stuff like that with the COVID virus. So what happens is that this little virus gets inhaled and it goes into your lungs and it goes into this onto the cell surface, and it has to put one of its spikes into the ACE2 receptor. The ACE2 receptor then it docks in, and the ACE2 receptor pulls it into the cell body. Once it's in the cell body, then it sheds its spike protein, and the virus, the mRNA or the DNA virus is exposed, and it can start replicating within the cell body. Now, what happens with ivermectin is that ivermectin goes and sits on top. The molecule goes and sits on top of the cell, of the ACE2 receptors on the cell surface. And when that spike protein comes down to dock, ivermectin grabs hold of the spike protein and it doesn't allow it to then dock into the ACE2 receptor. So it holds it outside of the ACE2 receptor. And in doing so, that virus will then die a natural death outside of the cell body.
So that then really makes sense. I understood. I thought it was breaking the cell wall, like during COVID when I was given a pack to manage COVID, and they said this, take the ivermectin. I thought it broke the cell wall, but basically it created a defense, and then if there is no home for the spike protein to rest on, I literally was 100% 24 hours later. This is a fascinating conversation. We've got just a little time after the break, so please don't go. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Feige Stern.
Okay, welcome back. We've only got a couple of minutes, Terry, and I think that we can actually have an entire conversation further around that. So we've got two things. Who are the COVID angels, and maybe how can the people engage with you if they feel that this is something that they would like to explore?
The COVID angels was a group of volunteers that put together during COVID, beginning at 2020, sort of in the beginning of the COVID pandemic, sort of in 2020, and then going forward in 2021, beginning of 2021, I couldn't cope with the amount of work that I was doing. I was working on the phone, keeping people in South Africa safe, because all those products were out there in the local co-ops, and people were going and buying ivermectin and not knowing how to use it, and all the different formulations of ivermectin, and then also ivermectin with additives, which was dangerous for humans. So I used to start at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would finish working at 12 o'clock at night, and I would twice during that I would then charge my phone, have something to eat, and then I'd work. And eventually I couldn't cope anymore, and we started the COVID angels. I had three archangels, and they ran the whole COVID angels for me. And I carried on doing my work. They would report to me if there was something serious. These girls were incredible. We had a couple of guys. I had 82 volunteers, trained them in a two-hour video. And they had provincial leaders at that stage. They would be reporting to the archangels. And then they had interactive screens. They had oxygen tanks on speed dial. They had Ubers on speed dial. They were Ubering oxygen tanks. They were getting paramedics to go and do home treatment. And my COVID angels worked with over 10,000 cases, and not a single person lost their lives. Wow. They were all kept at home. And the most important thing was they could reach out and they could say to a COVID angel, I feel terrible, I'm scared. And that COVID angel would say, put your oximeter on your finger, have a look at your sats, tell me what they are. Let's quickly do some breathing exercises. Use your ivermectin correctly. And we didn't isolate anybody. We would keep them in their bedrooms with the door open so that they could see their families. We took away the psychological trauma that they were going through during COVID. So the COVID angels were incredible. They gave out ivermectin to everybody that needed it. It was an amazing effort.
Well, kudos to you if you had like 10,000 people and not one person passed away under your care. I guess that speaks volumes. If somebody would like to be in contact with you, how can they?
People on Facebook normally send me a message. They can phone me. They send me WhatsApps all over the world. They send me WhatsApps, and I have referring doctors from America and Switzerland and a lot in South Africa as well. They've got patients that they just can't fix. They then send them to me, and they then come to me, and I put them onto a full antiparasitic protocol, and we get them better.
All right. So
do you want me to give you my number?
If you're willing to give it over the radio, you can. Alternatively, you can leave it with us.
Yes, and anybody's
are you happy to give it over the
I'm fine with it. Okay, I have no problem with it. It's out there.
All right, there you go. So give your number.
So shall I give it to you?
Yes.
It's obviously +27 82 49 44 588.
Okay, well, this has been truly an eye-opening, fascinating discussion, and we really, really appreciate you giving us of your time, of your knowledge. I certainly have learned a tremendous amount. And really, again, just to emphasize to everybody, you can shout it down if you want. That's okay. There's free speech and free thinking. But sometimes it's great just to think out of the box and listen to other possibilities. And we hope that we have done that for you today. Thank you for joining us on the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. This is 101.9 High FM.